Hello, and welcome to the MicroISV show here on Channel 9. I'm Michael Lehman, technology evangelist here at Microsoft, along with my co-host Bob Walsh. And today on the show, we have Nick Bradbury from NewsGator. You can find out more information about our MicroISV evangelism efforts at projectglidepath.net, and more information about Bob's books and his company at clearblogging.com and safarisoftware.com. And so, as I said, today we're joined by Nick Bradbury. Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Absolutely. And Bob, I think you have some questions for Nick.
Yes, I do. For those of you who don't know who Nick Bradbury is, he's something of a legend among micro-ISVs. He is the creator and founder of FeedDemon, which is arguably one of the most popular RSS readers on the Windows platform. And when FeedDemon came out, this was a micro-ISV that Nick was doing. So I guess the place to start, Nick, is can you tell me about how you got started as a micro-ISV and where has that led to?
Sure. It's kind of a long story, but I think I can give the condensed version. I started programming as a teenager on a TRS-80, and I originally sought a degree in computer science, but once I got to school, I found that I really didn't like it, and I ended up flunking out after a year. My degree is, in all things, journalism. I actually wanted to be a cartoonist. At the time, I drew a daily comic strip and a biweekly editorial cartoon for the student newspaper, and my first job out of college was at an editorial cartoonist for a local weekly. So I attempted to get my comic strip syndicated, but that went nowhere, and this was in the early 1990s when the web first took off, and I realized I didn't really need a publisher. I could just publish it myself, cheaply. So I created my cartoon site in Notepad, and I soon found that I needed a better tool. I couldn't find one, so I ended up getting back into programming and wrote a small HTML editor, which eventually turned into HomeSite. And the HomeSite became far more popular than my comic strip ever was, so before long, I dumped the comic strip, dumped the J job, and became a full-time micro-ISV. And well, I guess that's the short version of that story.
Okay, and after HomeSite, what came next?
Well, after HomeSite, that was sold to Allaire Corporation. I believe that was in 1995. I stayed with them for close to 2 years, and then I moved on and created a program called TopStyle, which originally was just a cascading style sheet editor for Windows. At the time, there was all sorts of cross-browser problems with CSS. I mean, there still are these days, but they're not nearly as bad as they used to be. So TopStyle's purpose was to help people create those websites without running into those cross-browser problems. And eventually, TopStyle morphed into a full-blown HTML editor.
Okay, and then what came after that?
Well, that actually led me into FeedDemon. I had an email list which I used to let customers know about new versions of TopStyle, specials, and that sort of thing. And spam filters and spam in general just became such a problem that I needed to get away from email. And that led me into the world of blogs. I had a blog that was then built into TopStyle, so customers using the application could every day see my blog within TopStyle. That led me to RSS, which opened the door to FeedDemon.
And when that happened, I mean, tell me a bit about what you developed FeedDemon in, and how did you go about doing it? How long did it take you to get the 1.0 out the door?
Sure. That was an unusual experience for me. I remember with TopStyle, I really sweated it. That was a very hard application for me to write. FeedDemon, I'd had the idea of a long time before I ever started creating it, but I never did it because I was afraid of handling two applications at the same time. Once I decided I wanted to do it, it was pretty strange. I sat down and just started coding, and it was like I had the whole UI in my mind already. So it just kind of flowed out. Over the course of a long weekend, when I told my wife I was going to what we call mad scientist mode,
okay.
I pretty much developed the whole FeedDemon UI. And I don't remember how long the beta testing period was, but I imagine it was about 3 or 4 months. And that was when 1.0 came out.
Do you have a sense of how many people are now using FeedDemon?
Honestly, these days it's hard for me to say because I no longer handle the sales. So I don't even know how many people are using it these days. And I don't know how many people are using it who never paid for it and that sort of thing.
Sure. Well, how about before you sold to NewsGator the rights to FeedDemon and I think also TopStyle?
That's correct. Yeah, that was in the tens of thousands.
Okay. By the way, what part of the country are you in?
I'm actually just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. NewsGator is located in Denver, but I work from home here in Tennessee.
Okay, so not exactly Silicon Alley.
Not exactly.
Okay. Well, when you got done with VDaemon, let me back up and ask it this way. What do you attribute being successful as a micro ISV to?
Honestly, I think the biggest reason that my applications have been successful is because they were tools that I needed. And they were tools that I would rely on for everyday use. Now, I don't use HomeSite anymore, but I always have VDaemon open, and I continue to use TopStyle every single day. You know, there are tons of features, bugs, and just usability issues I'd never seen if I hadn't been using it every day. I think that's the best advice for any micro ISV. Make sure you write something that you're going to use. Otherwise, you're just not going to develop something that's as usable and useful. And I've also focused on serving markets that are initially too small for larger companies to target, yet I will believe will grow substantially. So RSS wasn't very well known when I created VDaemon, but I decided it would be a big thing in a couple of years, so it seemed like a good opportunity. And that's the same case with HomeSite and TopStyle.
Well, let me ask you this. And I know this is kind of like the major leading question of the day. Where is RSS going? I mean, given that email sucks badly.
Yeah, that's a pretty big question. I think in the short term, we'll see RSS move into the mainstream, and some of that's going to rely on moving away from the idea of having to subscribe to feeds. I think we'll see RSS used more as plumbing for other services, such as meme trackers, personal news sites, and that sort of thing. And related to this, I think we'll see RSS used for attention-based services. You know, the holy grail for a lot of web companies is figuring out what people are paying attention to, and RSS just makes this so much simpler to do.
Well, can you break that down and give me kind of an example of what you mean? I understand RSS, but I'm not following what you mean.
Okay. We'll just go for a personal news site. You know, instead of just a static, you know, CNN.com, maybe it's a news page that's customized to what you like to read. So over time, it's paying attention to what you are clicking on, to what you're reading, and then it can offer you more similar stories. So you don't have to go seek out stories about a certain topic. They just come to you because it's because the software or the service has been paying attention to your reading habits.
Okay. So that's how you get away from the idea of the subscription model of RSS?
That's one way. Okay. But I also think meme trackers like TechMeme, Memorandum, TailRank, I think we'll see more of those sorts of things, where instead of subscribing to something, you're just seeing what the most popular stories are of the day across all sorts of topics.
So you're really talking about taking advantage there of the ubiquity of RSS as basically kind of a universal format.
Exactly. It breaks information down into what I call bite-sized chunks. You know, instead of being a whole HTML page of news stories, you can break it down to individual items, individual stories, and then just repurpose and republish those anywhere.
Well, there is a certain amount of balkanization that's happened to RSS over the years. I mean, there's 1.92, there's Atom, which I would call RSS. Do you think there's going to be somewhere down the line one unifying RSS format?
I really doubt it. If anything, we may even see another format come.
Okay.
But I hear a lot of people make a big deal about that, but I don't think it's that big a deal. If I look back at HomeSite, HTML had so many different versions, you know, and different browser implementations. The different versions of RSS are pretty simple compared to that.
Well, I'm curious, what type of RSS apps haven't you seen that you thought would be here by now?
Honestly, I would have expected to see some more multimedia-centric RSS applications, specifically video. You know, I think Democracy Player is pretty close to what I'm talking about.
That's the open-source video desktop player, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I just see that RSS is becoming increasingly multimedia-centric, and it's going to be used to deliver music and video even more than it does now, but there's not a whole lot out there to take advantage of that.
Okay.
Well, you know, since we're talking about RSS, it might be interesting to get your take on you know, obviously you're familiar with the whole enclosure process and podcasting and so forth. One of the things that we did, and I know Dave Weiner's been doing some thinking in this area recently as well, is actually using RSS with enclosures as a way to deliver non-media content. In our case with Project GlidePath, we actually deliver Visual Studio project templates, Visual Studio add-in, actual code, sample source code, you know, workflow to help people do things. Do you think there's going to be more things going on in that kind of non-consumerish uses of RSS?
Oh, definitely. You know, we're seeing that today. You know, people are just delivering Word documents, images, as you said, code templates. Yeah, I definitely think we'll see more of that. And I also think we'll see it move into the enterprise more than it has so far, because it's just such a useful in-house information delivery service. You know, and that I imagine, would have all sorts of attachments.
Right. I know that, for example, the SharePoint version that's in Office 2007 actually has the ability to create RSS feeds from discussions sure. and from document libraries and so forth.
Well, I mean, you have to look at the whole mashup world, and if you look at it, it really is riding on the back of RSS in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is.
Well, let me ask another question. If you were going to go back to being a micro ISV, if you're going to start basically from scratch right now, but with all the experience that you have and all the things you've done, what sort of things would you be looking at right now?
Honestly, I'd love to work on a web application, because that's a real weak area for me. I just know desktop applications. I've kind of shied away from that, though, because it's tricky for a one-person company. You know, a successful web application requires so much effort on the back end, so much infrastructure. But I guess services such as Amazon's S3 are helping make that less of a problem.
That's the central server technology that Amazon is, I think it's still in beta, but they're coming on strong.
Yeah. Now, if I did something on the desktop, it would probably involve RSS and video with maybe a little bit of BitTorrent thrown in. Just
okay.
Video is really exploding out there on the web, and it would be fun to create an application that simplified video delivery and sharing personal video lists, that sort of thing.
You know, I think that's one of those applications that everybody out there would like to buy. I mean, I personally would like to see just a video application that would keep track of things I'm interested in and winnow down not just the 500 channels I get via satellite, but the 50,000 million channels I could get if I went up to YouTube and
right.
just started bringing me the stuff that I'd like to actually watch.
Yep, and that goes back to the whole attention-based service idea, where once it pays attention to what you are viewing, it can recommend more things for you that you wouldn't search for or wouldn't have to search for.
Well, when you say you'd be interested in going toward a web app, is the converse of that true? In other words, would you go out and do a desktop app like FeedDemon again?
Probably I would do a desktop application next.
Okay.
But it's hard to say at this point because I'm not really seriously thinking about it.
Well, maybe I should ask, now that you're part of the NewsGator organization, what do you do on a daily basis?
Most of the time it's involved with FeedDemon. I'm still the sole developer of FeedDemon. And it's just coding that, working on bug fixes, adding features, and plotting where it's going to go.
Okay. And maybe I should ask that question because I'm a loyal FeedDemon fan. What does the future of FeedDemon look like?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Sure. What does the future of FeedDemon look like?
Ah, okay. Well, right now I'm working on FeedDemon 2.5, which should be in beta in a couple of weeks. And the main areas that I'm focused on right now are more integration with NewsGator services so that you can have the ability to synchronize news bins, for example. Those are kind of like your browser's favorites. Synchronizing them means you could access them on any computer just as you would a web application.
Uh-huh.
I'm also focused on providing a better offline experience since that's just one area where desktop applications have the advantage right now. But the main areas I'd like to focus on are just increasing the integration with web services. So it's kind of a blend between a desktop application and a web application.
Well, you know, one thing I've always been kind of interested in is how did this whole NewsGator, Nick Bradbury thing happen?
Well, I'm trying to think. I remember I had met the founder of NewsGator, Greg Reinecker, I believe at GnomeDex a couple of years ago, and we talked about me integrating with some of their synchronization services. At the time, I thought NewsGator was just this Outlook plugin. You know, I didn't see that being a huge thing. But then Greg posted on his blog a roadmap of where the company was going to go, and it talked about the enterprise, media, and all these areas that I thought were really interesting. Once I saw the kind of stuff that they were planning, I realized, this was a really good company. And funny enough, I think it was about a week later, Greg called me and wanted to talk with me about acquisition. You know, because I had read that blog post of his, I got on a plane, flew down there, and met with him.
And that's how the deal happened?
Yeah. I think all told, it took about a month with far more paperwork than I ever want to see again.
Well, let me ask you this. A lot of micro-ISVs wouldn't mind being acquired, to put it mildly. And not talking about the specifics of your deal, but any advice you'd give there to a micro-ISV if, a, quote, real, unquote, company comes knocking at your door?
Sure. I would say before you sell, first take the time to get to know the people you'll be working with, get a feel for the company's culture. That's a big reason I flew to NewsGator. I didn't want to just do the deal over the phone. I wanted to make sure I met the people I'd be working with and just really knew what the company was all about. You want to make sure that you're going to fit in before you be acquired. And you also want to make sure that your role is well-defined. If you're used to doing everything yourself, it can be pretty tricky to figure out what you're actually responsible for after you're acquired. And then finally, I'd say pay real close attention to the non-compete clause. Try to make sure it's as narrow as possible, because if things don't work out, you don't want an overly strict non-compete clause limiting what you can do next.
That sounds like really good advice. Any advice for micro-ISVs in general?
When it comes to acquisition or just about anything?
Just about anything. You're the man who's been there and done that, and you've got the T-shirts and I hope the bank account to show it. So I guess the question is, what advice would you give your aspiring micro-ISVs right now, 2007?
Well, I guess that would go back to what I said earlier. Create something that's useful to you that you believe would be useful to a lot of other people as well. You really want to make sure that what you create is something that you will use, or else you just won't be able to make it as usable. All the time people are using software that just doesn't work the way they think it should and has obvious bugs. And a lot of time that just means that developers aren't eating their own dog food. They're not using what they created. And just also make sure you create something that's fun. Feed Demon for me has been a blast. I'm a real news junkie. So I have this application I created that brings news to me. So I have fun developing it and using it.
Well, just to go back for a second, you mentioned that having that blog is really sort of what put you on the map and what made things happen. I mean, it was almost like a deal between two different blogs. How important is it for micro-ISVs to do blogs? I have my opinion, but you're someone who's been there and done it.
I guess that really depends on the type of application. If you're targeting a market that is comprised mainly of people that don't even read blogs, it wouldn't be that big a deal. But otherwise, I'd say it's really important. One of the things people don't like about large companies is they tend to be sort of faceless. You don't know who you're dealing with. You don't know who created the stuff you're using. People generally have a better feel about my software just because they feel like they know me personally. And I think that also affects how many people will actually buy the application. Piracy is huge right now. Always has been, and it's not going away. I get a lot of people telling me that they were going to use a pirated version until they read my blog, decided they liked who I came across as, and felt bad about wanting to use a pirated version, so they paid for it.
Yeah, it's harder to victimize people you know.
Exactly.
That's kind of one of the things that's coming out of criminology research these days. Well, let me ask you another question there, which is, what would you suggest as far as, desktop versus web? I mean, we keep hearing from various people, Joel Spolsky being one of them, that desktop apps are, well, if not passe, then sort of passing from the scene. What do you think?
I don't know. Honestly, people have asked me that for several years now, and yet desktop applications are still here. I do think that the need for desktop apps is shrinking, but I don't see them going away anytime soon. I do think that operating system vendors need to simplify software installation and maintenance, though. To me, that's just a huge problem with desktop apps. I think really what's happening right now is that web apps and desktop apps are changing to become more like each other. You know, web apps are using Ajax to provide a desktop-like experience. Desktop apps are integrating with web services to provide web-like information delivery. You know, we've seen applications that really combine the best of those worlds, like iTunes. You know, that's a great example. It's a great desktop application powered by a web-based service and ordering system. And I guess in some ways, FeedDemon is a combination of the two types of applications. You know, it's really more of a specialized web browser than anything else, and it relies on web technologies like HTML, CSS, XML, XSLT, and SOAP just as much as it does traditional desktop code. But as I alluded to, I think if desktop apps do go away, I imagine it'll be in large part due to how scary it is for non-techies to install them. You know, how many web applications would non-techies use if the first time they tried to use them, they got this cryptic firewall error message or a warning that using that web application might pose a security risk? You know, desktop apps are just too hard right now, and installation is the biggest barrier.
I would have to agree with you. I mean, I've gone through more install programs than I care to think about in my history, and it's getting to the point where, you know, I can just see how the average user is going to be afraid to install anything, especially when more and more things are on the web that can do at least some of the functionality that they used to do on the desktop.
Right.
So, Nick, let me jump in and ask you a question about that.
Sure.
So, first question is, what is FeedDemon written in?
FeedDemon is written in Delphi, primarily.
Okay. And is that a long-term trend? If you were going to build another product today, what would you use?
Well, I hate to say this to my fellow Delphi developers, but I wouldn't choose Delphi. You know, for me, it has served me wonderfully well. It's a great development tool, but at this point, if I was going to do a desktop application for Windows, I'd probably choose C Sharp.
Well, that makes sense. And as a long-time Pascal compiler writer, I developed my first one back in 1978. You know, it was very hard to give up Pascal for C, and then C for C++, and C++ for C Sharp. But the productivity gains are just you can't beat them.
Right. In fact, FeedDemon was going to be my first C Sharp application. But then I decided it would just take me too long to get to market with a development tool I'd never used.
Yeah, I can understand that. So, since we're talking about that, and we're talking about installation, have you ever given any thought to the whole process of click once, which is like installing without installing?
Yeah, I haven't so far, just because it's a Delphi application. And my understanding is it's not really available for Delphi apps.
Right.
It's more of a managed code sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But is that something you think would reduce the scariness of the applications if there really, you know, essentially wasn't an install?
Yeah, definitely. But I don't know if that would get rid of those firewall warnings. Those are just as bad as the warnings you get downloading something.
Oh, true. You mean the ones that are saying the firewall is blocking this, do you want to unblock it?
Right. I mean, most of those messages are just so techie. You know, there's no way a non-technical user can look at the firewall dialog that's asking them whether an application can connect and really figure out what it's asking them.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Well, Nick, let me ask one more question.
Sure.
Again, as a FeedDemon loyal fan, any tips for us FeedDemon users? Like, what are we probably not realizing we can do with FeedDemon that we could do?
Okay, I guess that depends on how you're using it. One of the first decisions I made with FeedDemon was to make it sort of look like Outlook, just so people would be familiar with it. You know, so many people on Windows use Outlook that I might as well make it similar to use. But unfortunately, that has led people to obviously treat it like email, where they have to read every single item. And I really think that's unnecessary. You don't need to read everything in RSS. In fact, in my case, I maybe read one article out of 20. you know, I'm just skimming the headlines. So my tip would be to tell FeedDemon to automatically mark items as read for you. Otherwise, it just seems like work. You know, if you go into your RSS reader and it tells you you've got 1,000 unread items, it's just overwhelming because you think of like your Outlook inbox, 1,000 items I've got to read, maybe respond to. You know, but I'd say get away from that. Just treat it like a river of news. Look for headlines that are interesting. If you see an interesting headline, click on it. Otherwise, just let FeedDemon mark it as read for you.
That sounds like good advice. I'm looking at FeedDemon right now, my copy of it, and, well, I haven't looked at it in the last couple of days, and I've got easily, 1,300, 1,500 items that are new.
Yeah.
At least I found one technique that works well with whatever RSS feeder you're using, and that's if you take the feeds that are most important to you, you know, the 20% that gives you the 80% of the things you click on, the 80% that you're paying attention to,
uh-huh.
probably coming from 20% of your feeds.
Yeah, exactly.
Put those in one folder and really sort of focus your time there, you're going to get the most benefit for your time. And that's, you know, easy to do with FeedDemon because as soon as I move my feeds around in different folders, well, that's also synchronized up on NewsGator. So if I'm online at just a computer and I'm in my NewsGator account, it's already organized for me.
Right. And actually, I guess that ties into another tip I was going to make, and that is start unsubscribing from stuff.
Okay.
I mean, people... I'm sorry?
No, go ahead, please.
Yeah. You know, over the past couple of years that people have used RSS readers, they've subscribe to stuff because it's so easy. Unsubscribing has not been that easy. It's not that obvious a lot of times. So, for example, in FeedDemon, I'm now showing you the feed that you're paying the most attention to and the ones you're paying the least attention to. And next to the least attention ones, there's these little red X's so you can just unsubscribe right there. I would say start pruning your feeds. Get rid of stuff you're not actually reading. If there's something really important in one of those feeds, chances are someone in the feeds you are reading is going to link to it or talk about it. So I meet some people that have like 1,000 subscriptions, and I just wonder, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Do you not have a job? Do you actually read all that information, or what?
Lucky their skim it? Job is reading all that information, but if
yeah.
not, they got problems.
Yeah.
I want to come back to just one last point. I think then we're going to wrap it up here. Email. Is RSS possibly the antidote for email? And how crappy it's gotten.
In some ways it is, and that's why I started using RSS. I needed to communicate with my customers, and email just wasn't working. So, yeah, I think in some ways it is a replacement for email. It's a lot easier to have people unsubscribe from their RSS reader and actually choose which information they're going to receive and let that be up to the consumer and not, you know, not the person flooding their inbox.
Well, it sounds like... based on what you just said, it'd be more likely you'd recommend to a micro-ISV that instead of having, for instance, a way to subscribe to their email newsletter, make it easy for them to subscribe by RSS to their email, their newsletter feed. In other words, get away from email.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I would definitely recommend that.
Okay.
I mean, for one thing, email is just hard to manage by yourself.
Yeah, I think that's a problem that everybody has. I've talked to a lot of people, and if there's one thing that's universal is that we all are spending more and more time on email and getting less out of it.
Yeah, and if you're relying on email to communicate with customers, it can be even worse. I think the thing that pushed me over the edge with TopStyle was someone had added me to a anti-spam blacklist. You know, even though it was an opt-in email, you had to actually say, send me this email. Someone got it, didn't like it, said it was spam, reported me, and then suddenly I was blacklisted from a lot of people's inboxes.
Well, can you make RSS work one-to-one the way email is? Or is there always going to be a one-to-many or many-to-one situation?
Well, I guess you could make it one-to-one, but you know that would rely on cookies and that sort of thing. I don't know if you'd really want to do that. You know, for newsletters and things like that. But there are plenty of examples of one-to-one RSS right now. For example, FeedBurner, they have your personal FeedBurner feed, which tells you if there's any problems in your feed. I've got a personal Amazon feed, Gmail, all these other things.
Uh-huh. Well, good things to think about and good things to know, and hopefully some of the micro ISVs out there will start pushing RSS even further.
Oh, I hope so.
Great. Michael, any last questions?
So how long ago was it that you started yourself as a micro ISV?
I believe that was 1994.
Wow, so you've been doing it for 13 years now.
Yeah, I had a two-year stint with Alair in the middle there, and I've been with NewsGator close to 2 years now.
Is it something that you conceive of yourself as doing for the foreseeable future as well?
So far, yeah. I mean, I really enjoy writing software. I'm not bored with it at all. You know, there's other things I'd like to do. I wouldn't mind getting back to cartooning sometime. But for now, I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
Well, awesome. Well, Nick, thanks so much for coming on the Micro ISV show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Sure. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Well, this is Michael Lehman and Bob Walsh, co-host of the Micro ISV show here on Channel 9, saying stay tuned next week for another interview with someone who has crucial information that you need as a Micro ISV. And if you want to find out about Microsoft's Micro ISV efforts and things that we can do for you, head on over to projectglidepath.net. And if you want to find out more about Bob and his books and his software companies, head on over to safarisoftware.com or clearblogging.com. And we'll see you next week on Channel 9.